It was another damp and foggy morning. I'm not talking about San Francisco. I'm talking about London. And the crowds at the Embankment Tube station, you know, the subway station, well, they were thicker than usual. It was Christmas time. Busy commuters were rushing to catch the subway into the city. And they didn't even notice Margaret McCullum sitting alone on one of the benches. And they never saw her. But Margaret was there every morning, waiting. It had become kind of a ritual since her husband had died a few years earlier. His death had left a hole in her heart, and she missed him terribly. She missed everything about him. She even missed the sound of his voice. And so every morning, Margaret went to the station and listened, waiting to hear her late husband's voice over the loudspeaker as each train arrived. You see, her husband had been the iconic voice of the London Underground for over 40 years. He was the one who warned passengers about the dangerous opening between the train and the platform. It was just three small words that he would say, but it comforted Margaret every time. Over and over, she would sit and wait for the next train just to hear his voice in that announcement. And then one day, there was a different voice. It was cold and impersonal. And it took her a while, but she finally understood that her husband's recorded announcement had been replaced with a digital version. Well, she pleaded with officials, and she was successful. The recording was returned just in time for Christmas. And still today, if you go to the Embankment Tube station in London, you will hear the voice of her beloved husband crying out with each arriving train, "Mind the gap." Today, we begin a new six-week message series that we are calling Mind the Gap. It's all about the dangerous open spaces in human relationships. With almost 8 billion people living on the, can you believe it's almost 8 billion people living on the planet today, there are enormous gaps between various groups and individuals. We have tremendous diversity in this world with lifestyles, beliefs, race, culture, class, but these differences can sometimes erupt in disagreement and conflict and sometimes even violence. It can be like a dangerous third rail, you know, that electric rail that lies beneath a subway platform. So we have to watch where we step. And I don't mean to be dour at all. I'm an optimist at heart, but I did a little research for this series and it's not so great. A recent study by the Pew Foundation revealed that the United States is one of the most conflicted countries when it comes to questions of social unity. The murder rate in our nation rose 30% last year, the largest single year increase in more than a century. Nearly 90% of employees say they have experienced conflict in the workplace, and about 30% of them say it's almost constant. Family conflict is also a reality, right? One British study, I have a hard time believing this, but it's a bona fide study. It claims that families spend an average of 49 minutes a day arguing. Arguing about something. And it only gets worse over the holidays, right? 40% of people fully expect to get into a fight with one or more family members at Christmas dinner. I don't know if that happened to you, but I went home after Christmas and we only got into two fights. So that was good. And I have a good relationship with my family. Anyway, I think we all sense an escalating tension in our nation as a whole over the last several years. But here's the thing. Conflict is not always bad. It actually can be a blessing. Although it's hard, conflict can ultimately heal wounds. It can forge respect and understanding and create empathy between people when it's seen through a lens of love. You know, it's outstanding if you really think about it. God himself is a community of three distinct persons. Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. They're all of the same substance, but they're different. They are different persons. That's the teaching. And when we say God is love, we say that because God is in right relationship with himself. And to love the other as perfectly as these three divine persons, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, love each other, well, that's the ultimate challenge for humanity, for us. We were made for relationships, and so we might as well learn to do them well. And how we do that is what this series is all about. The Bible has some very important advice about dealing with conflict and developing healthy relationships. And in this series, we're going to discover together some very practical approaches for doing just that. Now, this week, we start by looking at the root of all conflict. If I was to ask you what the root of all conflict is, you would probably have many different ideas about it. Well, I've done some research, and I have an idea about what the root of all conflict is, and I have the microphone, so I'm going to tell you what I think it is. The root of all conflict is the false belief that we know the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, and the other guy doesn't. Truth is important, of course, right? Knowing the truth is important, and the truth can unify people. In fact, that's what we were hearing in the first reading today, that beautiful reading where the people had come home from exile in Babylon. They came home to Jerusalem. It was destroyed. They figured out a way to rebuild the walls of Jerusalem, a major accomplishment. And then the first thing they did was read from God's law to all the people. Because truth unifies people. But the problem is, we all think we have a monopoly on the truth. Now, truth can be known. It is not relative. I'm not arguing that at all. Truth can be known, and it is not relative. And of course, as Catholics, we believe that when it comes to salvation, that the Catholic Church has the fullness of truth. But even the Catholic Church, in its documents, will say that there are elements of truth outside the church that we can learn from. And so the root of all conflict actually is the belief that we know the whole truth, and the person that we're in a conflict with doesn't. And it's this need to be right all the time that can destroy relationships. And the path to healing begins with the acknowledgement that each of us only has a partial understanding of truth. The more we open ourselves to learning more from someone else, even if it's someone we disagree with, and the more we are genuinely curious about that other person's point of view, the more we let truth into our lives. Rather than framing the conversation, if we're in a conflict with someone, rather than framing the conversation as a debate over the truth, over what's right, who's right, a stance of curiosity frames it as an opportunity to learn more about what the other person is thinking and feeling and worried about. What are they worried about with this situation? How do they see the circumstances? Why did they react the way they did? That's curiosity, and it will open us up to more truth. Now, of course, that takes a healthy dose of humility, which I freely admit I lack, and it's also hard to be really curious when you're angry, right? You're angry at the other person, when you're hurt, or when you're frustrated. I know it's hard, but it pays off every time, because being curious about the other person paints a more accurate picture of reality. And it will go a long way to repairing the relationship. And this is the point that St. Paul was making in the second reading. I'm going to talk exclusively about the second reading tonight. And next week, we're going to hear about the gospel both from this week and next week, because it's kind of a story that goes together. So I'm talking about the second reading. Paul was writing to this early Christian community called the Corinthians. They were his problem children. He had founded that community. He planted that church. He watered it. It grew. It was great. And then he went away and he came back and he found out that they were all divided, that they were at odds with each other. And the problem seems to have been this. They had been blessed with an inordinate number of spiritual gifts. Members of their community could do amazing spiritual things like speak in tongues. You've probably heard of that. They could heal people. They could prophesy about the future. They could do all these great spiritual things. But they were at each other's throats. Why? Because each person thought that their special gift made them more important and brought them closer to the truth than all the others. So Paul had to remind them that they were all members of one diverse community where the sum is greater than the individual parts. And Paul compares the parts of a human body to the diversity within a community of people. Here's what he says. We were all baptized into one body. The body is not a single part, but it's many. One body, many parts. And so, he says, a more complete understanding of the truth depends on all the parts working together. Here's what he says about that. He says, if the whole body were an eye, think about that. If the whole body were an eye, where would the hearing be? You could see everything, but you couldn't hear anything, and so you wouldn't have access to the whole truth. And if the whole body were hearing, where would the sense of smell be? Just as the parts of a body need each other to function, so too, we as members of a diverse community need each other to develop a more complete understanding of reality. But that means we need to be able to really listen to what the other person has to say. And there are many ways to listen. You can listen without paying attention to someone or even caring about them. You can listen with your mind. And you know, when we listen with our mind, it's often because we're trying to figure out what's wrong with what the other person is saying. Or you can choose to listen with your heart. And when you listen with your heart, you listen with love and empathy. You listen for feeling, for meaning, for understanding, so that at the end of the conversation, and this is the goal of any conflict you're having, at the end of the conversation, you would be able to tell the other person with whom you're having a conflict their story. In such a way that that person would say to you, yes, that's how I see it. You understand why this is important to me. And this has happened to me quite a bit. As you can imagine, being a pastor means dealing with a lot of conflict. And in my last church, before coming here, a parishioner approached me one day after Mass with a complaint. It happens. It turns out that I had moved something in the church. Like, I know I never do that, but I had moved something, and I don't remember exactly what it was. It was something kind of minor. I think it was like a candlestick, literally a candlestick that I moved from one side to the other side or something like that. And I thought it was a minor change, but for him, it was catastrophic. And he came up to me and he talked to me about it. He's very respectful, but I asked him why it mattered. I said, why does it matter that the candlestick moved? And he said, Father, everything in this world changes so fast. I'm getting older and I feel vulnerable, and sometimes I feel like the ground is moving beneath me and I can't keep up. Church is the one place where I've always been able to come and everything always remains the same. And I find that comforting. His explanation touched my heart. I still didn't agree, but I understood where he was coming from. And that was the important thing. We left as friends. We were good friends. Great parishioner, good guy. But I learned something from that conversation. I thought to myself, maybe I shouldn't be always so quick to change things all the time. Obviously, I still haven't learned completely. But hopefully you agree that the TV's up on the wall is better than that big old huge thing that was sitting here before. Welcoming your feedback if you'd like to talk about it. But anyway, but I did learn something from that conversation. And I learned also, and I'm conveying to you, that the first approach to managing conflict in a healthy way is by intentionally remaining curious about what others believe and think, even if we disagree. And that involves listening to their story with empathy and concern. St. Paul made the same point to his community. He said, God has so constructed the body that the parts may have the same concern for one another. If one part suffers, all the parts suffer with it. If one part is honored, all the parts share its joy. That's what listening with empathy means. We're concerned for the other part of the body because we're all one. And so I have two challenges for you this week. First, we always say this at the beginning of series, but I think it's important. Try to commit to this series. Each week, we're going to be covering a different way or a different aspect of managing conflict. And so please make sure you watch every week. Even if you're out of town, you can always find it on our website. The second thing I would challenge you to do this week is, if you have the time, think back to a recent disagreement you had with someone and ask yourself this question. If I could get over being mad about this, what could I actually learn from this other person's point of view? A few weeks ago, I was in the balcony upstairs here after Mass. I was dealing with something, and I saw a man looking up at me from one of the pews, and I called down and I asked him if he needed me. He said no, and he walked off. But a few days later, he approached me after Mass. He reminded me of the exchange we had, and he told me how much that simple question had meant to him. Do you need me? Then he said, of course I need you, Father. You are my priest. Well, we both nearly cried. It's a simple concept, but a fundamental truth. We all need each other. It's why he needed me. It's why I need all of you. We all need each other. And remembering that simple fact goes a long way to resolving conflict, so that we can all
mind the gap.